excursion number 17965, Sergeant Major Frederick Beadle, Reel 10.
Sergeant Major Beadle, Reel 10. When we were discussing stations in India, you said that you preferred Dinapore to Lahore, although Lahore was a much larger city with more facilities. Why did you prefer Dinapore? You said you preferred Dinapore to Lahore.
Oh, yes.
I wonder why that was.
Well, one of the main reasons, I suppose, was that in Dinapore, there was nothing outstanding really to go for except special occasions to Patna or the railway club. And people tended to keep in the barracks more than they would do if they were stationed in Lahore. We've got a big town with various entertainments. That would go back even more important still to Bareilly, where literally there was nothing outside of the camp within walking distance. So we kept together more as a regiment, I would say, certainly as far as the sports is concerned, because we had inter-platoon this, inter-platoon that, and it was a great thing. One had to be outside the bungalow between the hours of 6 and 7 and play some sport or the other, whether it was organised or not. And it was great fun, all the various competitions we had, such as hockey, football or what have you, cross-country running. Major IEF Campbell instituted a move for us to build our own running track, which we had, which was a good 400 yards track. So I think that's the main reason I say that. We were more together as a regiment than we would have been in a big town like Lahore, where there's always something you could go out into the town to do. And it was a pleasant walk as far as the town was concerned too. It was 20 minutes, half hour I suppose, to walk into town. Well, that's my reason really, keep it together as a regiment and getting more fun out of it.
Now, you mentioned also that you'd done a Carter course before being promoted to Lance Sergeant and that you'd studied tactics.
Yes.
Did the tactics you were studying follow along the same lines as the sort of tactical training you'd been doing on exercises, or was there anything new about the tactics you were learning on the Carter course? Was there anything new about the tactics you learned on the Carter course that was different to what you'd been doing on exercises?
I suppose it's true to say we went into it with a bit more depth and a little bit more forward-looking too. We'd never combined our tactics with the Air Force, for instance. But it was mentioned that the Air Force was coming more into play as a striking force than it had been in the past. So we had that. We didn't do anything about it, but it was mentioned and pointed out what could happen. So that made that a bit more interesting. And of course, being infantry, it went into great depth as far as using ground, as is both in defence and attack. So much into it did we go that the course I was on, from corporal to sergeant, there was only four people who passed the tactics course, part of it, where it was a variety of subjects we did in the promotion course, and one of them was tactics. And as I say, there's only four or five of them that passed the tactics. The others had to sit again. They got quite a rollicking, actually, because they failed. It even included a couple of lieutenants who had recently joined the regiment.
Did they pass the exam first time?
One did and one didn't.
What sort of examination was it for tactics?
The use of ground was one, for instance, and use of movement and fire Night tactics. I'm going to shake my brains up to think about this now. I think the main thing was the use of ground, which is natural for as far as infantry is concerned.
How was the examination conducted? Was it a written examination or an oral examination or a practical exercise of some sort?
The tactics was a written.
A written examination.
Yes, yeah. We did rifle, Lewis gun, drill, PT, 6 or 7 subjects, I suppose, on our courses. And those that could be done practical were done practical.
Yes.
I'm not saying we couldn't have done tactics practically. We could do, because you've got the rest of the regiment, you could form up half of them against the other half, so to speak. But it wasn't done. It was done in writing, which, on reflection, I think is probably the best way, because the examiners, they can look back on it again. They've got it in writing. They can't go wrong. They can't have forgotten anything. So, I think that's the best way to have done it, really.
What methods of instruction did they use to teach tactics?
I've got to think about the tactics and how I came upon them. Now, the tactics, as I say, was included in the promotion exams. It was included in question and answers, and more important still, it was included once a year, almost every year, with going to camp and doing practical tactics on the ground. That probably covered everything, really.
But when you were on the Carter course specifically, how did they teach it there? Was it all done by classroom
lectures.
Work? In
lectures. Lectures, yes. Mm. Main lectures. I can't ever remember. Oh, I'll tell a lie. I can remember just once doing it on the ground. And the reason I remember that very well, because it rained terribly hard, as it can do in India in that time of the year we did this. And we were absolutely soaking. After Carter took up defensive position, one man with one flag represented a regiment, so to speak, while the rest attacked or defended, whichever the case may be. But that's the only one occasion on a Carter course that I remember it being done practically.
This was a tactical exercise without troops.
That's right, yes.
Did you, in the course of the tactical training, ever go out to appreciate ground as an exercise?
Go out to?
Appreciate ground, to study a piece of ground.
Oh yes. That came in more than anything with fire orders.
Yes.
One was taught how to appreciate a bit of dead ground, how close one could get to the enemy without being seen by using the ground. With the tactics on the ground, in an attack, for instance, you would be doing it the old-fashioned way, as it was even then. I think there was nothing startlingly new about anything there. It was movement of fire, as you could appreciate. One lot going forward, by there, recovered by the other lot. One would have formed up the attack by probably having units on the flanks to keep the heads down of the enemy, while the people in the front advancing from the front go forward. And then the situation would be reversed. But,
what sort of formation would a platoon be in for that sort of approach to the enemy?
Well, that would depend on the ground. If it's a big open piece of ground, there's only one way forward to go forward. They're taught to go forward stretched out in a single rank, if that is possible, and to keep different paces apart and not take a straight line obviously, so they didn't make an easy target as far as shooting was concerned. But that was about the limit that we did it. If it was a big open piece of ground, you could do that. If it was a closer piece of ground, such as the frontier, then you had to form different tactics in order to cover your troops as they're going through. On one or two occasions, we did have it advancing under fire, practical.
How would you advance when you did that? Would it be the same skirmish line or
yes,
some other? Mm.
From a safety point of view, it was very well controlled. We had a machine gun company, of course. We'd have machine gun people on the flanks or in the rear as well because of their range. The infantry would advance while they, or at least the rifle companies would advance under the automatic fire of the machine guns, whether it be from the flanks or from the rear. But in a close bit of ground, of course, your machine guns are less useful. Mm. It's man on foot with rifle. And you've got to advance according to the ground, with a bit of safety from your own point of view, if you're advancing, and safety of the rest of the company or regiment, whichever the case may be. More than that, I don't think I can say about it.
Did you ever make use of a sand table while you were being trained in
yes.
tactics?
Yes, we did. It was used regularly on the promotion course. And that was where we were taught the use of ground to start off with. And then you would go out in an open piece of ground and question and answer, form up the attack or the defence, whichever the case may be, and the officer in charge would then point out the faults, which would be quite obvious because you're on the ground seeing people in different places. About it, I think.
Now, you were saying that one of the reasons why you were made a physical training instructor was that you'd shown an interest in physical training while you were in regimental service.
Yes.
Can you say what it was that attracted you particularly to PT and when you first felt this inclination to take an interest in it?
Going back to 1932-33, again I refer to the one officer who was responsible for it, was Major IEF Campbell. He inaugurated, I would say, PT in the regiment as a must compared with the slipshod way it was done before. And so PT was included on promotion exams. And by doing that, I found that I was able to do a bit better than the average. Not excellent or anything like that, but a bit better than the average, which whetted my appetite a bit for PT and gymnastics, because we even started gymnastics as far back as that. From then on, I just accepted PT as part of my training or as part of my ability to teach others. And that went on until the end of my first engagement. And as I've said before, when I was called up on the 3rd of September 1939 at the outbreak of war, I went down to Bodmin, and maybe because I was known by a lot of people, I'd been in the regiment a long time, particularly reservists coming back from the old 1st Battalion. Somebody or the other passed my name to the Warrant Officer PT Corps in the Bodmin Depot, and I was shifted into the gyms to help out. I had no thought at that particular stage of going to the PT Corps. if anybody had asked me if I'd like to go to the PT Corps at that stage, I would have been mostly surprised, because I did not consider myself a fit member for the PT Corps.
When did you actually transfer?
But I did a PT course in December 39 in Tidworth, which I think I've mentioned before.
Yes.
It was only a four-week thing, and then back to the depot again at Bodmin to take my quota of squads coming through the gym. And then at the back end of January, I was sent off to the PT school on an advanced course. Even at that stage, I had no idea that I might go into the PT Corps, not until I'd been there, been at the school for a few weeks. And if anybody had asked me at that early stage whether I wanted to or not, I would probably have said no. The more we went on with the course, the more I realised I was a little bit more knowledgeable than quite a lot of the others who were on the course. For instance, you had professional footballers and professional sportsmen of all kinds down there at that stage in time, with the thought to transfer them into the PT Corps and send them out to units. And I realised then that with my service, I was probably a bit better than some of those because of the knowledge I'd gained the previous 9 years. But even then, it wasn't until the course was finished did I realise, or perhaps that's not the right word, did I find that I was asked to transfer.
Who asked you?
I was just going to come on to that. Now I come to think about it, I wasn't even asked to go. I was automatically transferred. If anybody had asked me, I think I might have still said no, because I had a great affection for the DCLI. But the deciding factor, which perhaps is surprising, but I must be truthful about it, was that by transferring to the PT Corps, I had an increase in pay of one and threepence a day, which in those days was quite a big lift up. I was getting 6 shillings a day as a sergeant. One and threepence a day, maybe 7 and threepence a day, which was a good week's wages. And weighing up the pros and cons, I decided to let things lie and keep in the PT Corps.
How did you actually find out that you had been transferred? Did you get a posting or something?
Yeah, it was posted up on the notice board. Yes. Mm.
Now, you said that you might have refused to leave the DCLI, and you subsequently served in the PT Corps, and you must have seen other soldiers from other regiments and units. What is it that is so distinctive about the DCLI? Or was distinctive about the DCLI?
Well, it was a friendly regiment. If you can imagine it, when you went overseas in those days, the sooner you could get home is 6 years. You've got to serve 6 years out there before you could get home either on leave or on home establishment. That is, home establishment, or you know what home establishment is, I suppose. They had two regiments for each county in those days. One regiment was overseas, one was at home. And if you had finished your 6 years overseas in the one, then you could claim transfers to the other at stationed at home. So being together for 6 years like that, you got to know each other so well. For instance, due to promotions, I covered every company in the battalion in those 9 years, except the machine gun company. So I was known by a lot of people. I knew a lot of people. There was always a friend somewhere or the other. And I don't know, it's like your own family. You get a feeling for them you don't want to change. if you want a particular man to do a particular job, you know the man to look for. Whereas you go into a Strays regiment, you wouldn't know that, which I discovered very rapidly when I went through the PT Corps. I was sent out as the PT instructor of a battalion. There, you was just an individual, and there was nobody you could fall back on. You had the job to do, and you had to do it. You was supposed to be the professional at the job, and you were left to do it as a professional would be left to do it. But there wasn't that friendliness with the NCOs and that in the regiments to which you was attached. It wasn't quite the same. And even now, although I served with the DCLI, the PT Corps, and the RESC, it's only the old DCLI comrades I remember and who I visit now and again, or enjoy a social function with now and again. The PT Corps, unfortunately, you're sent out as an individual to a regiment, and you could do that all your service, which means that you're learning about people in other regiments, but you don't know anything about people in your own corps, because you don't serve with them. The only time you see them is if you, like Sandhurst, for instance, when I went there, there was probably 8 or 9 of us there. I was just another member, really, which I didn't enjoy. I must admit, I preferred to be going along under my own steam.
Presumably, you must have met other people in the PT Corps occasionally on courses.
Well, yes. You had refresher courses every so often. And it was on a refresher course that you did meet up a bit. But on a refresher course, you wouldn't have all that many on it. You wouldn't get to know them very much. You'd be with them on a refresher course probably a couple of weeks, back to whatever regiment you were serving with. After a few months, you've forgotten about them anyway.
Did you find that some regiments were more welcoming than others to specialists from outside like yourself? Did they vary in the way in which they treated you?
They did. They varied considerably. It depended on the training officer, of course, the work you got from the regiment. But some were all for it. Some thought it a waste of time, I think. If I could find any fault, I suppose, with the system of the PT Corps... I often thought of chaps like sportsmen coming into there, and how they got round to get things going, the regiments they were posted to, because I think the PT Corps could have done a little bit better as far as introducing people into regiments, in as much that... For instance, a chap who hadn't been in the army long probably wouldn't know there was such a thing as a training officer. Probably wouldn't know that if he wanted to get some work, he'd go and see the training officer and say, yeah, what about it? Are we going to do any PT or not? They could very well be weeks with the regiment and not do a stroke of work because they don't know where to go and jog people's memories that they are there and they would like to do something. I think the Corps could have introduced a couple of subjects on joining battalions, where to get your work from, how you go about getting extra instructors, such as Lance Corporal, what they call them?
Assistant instructors. Assistant instructors?
Assistant instructors. You see, there was assistant instructor courses going, right, left and centre, which they could have pushed them out to, but they probably didn't realise this. I think that sort of thing could have been tightened up a bit and made more use of if they'd had a couple of written exams on it. Taught, first of all, by lecturers, and had written exams. Then when they went to the regiment, they think, who's the first bloke to look for? Training officer. And take things from there.
When you went to a battalion for the first time, whom would you report to when you arrived?
I reported the orderly room when I arrived, but in those days it was a bit air and scare. The first posting I got was to the London Rough Brigade.
Yeah.
And
were they keen on PT?
They were keen on it, all right, but it was a question of getting time to do it. At the time I joined them, they were billeted around the docks. We hadn't been there long before we shot up to March in Cambridgeshire. We hadn't been there long before we went across country to Ingestreve, Stafford. It struck me at the time, that just about the time of Dunkirk, that they were moving troops round right, left and centre to confuse any spies we might have had in the country as to how many units there was where, because we were only doing a day in, a day there. We got to Ingestreve in Stafford, and we had about 4 or 5 weeks there. I did a bit of PT there and got the regiment going a bit. But from there, I was posted to the Warwick Depot.
And what about them? What was their approach to?
Absolutely, 100%. The CO's quarters, he was in a married quarter, which was right next door to the gymnasium. He had a chat every morning if he saw me out there about things. Yes, it was absolutely first class. And I was fortunate there. I stayed there for over a year.
Did you normally spend less time than a year with a... Was it normally shorter than a year, your posting?
The way it had been at that point in time...
Yes. Because London Rifle Brigade, you were with them... Did you go to them immediately after you'd finished your course at Aldershot?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. They had a unit in the academy at
yes.
Woolwich.
Yes.
They were just potted around all London. It was a stupid situation, really. I mean, in the academy at Woolwich, the lovely little gymnasium they had there, they'd used it as a garage for their for their army transport. Which, that was the situation.
Now, you were saying that when you got your reservists down at Bodmin, many of them found it difficult to get fit again because they had neglected their PT when they were in civil life. London Rifle Brigade would be a TA, wouldn't they?
That's right, they were TA.
What was their level of fitness like when you got to them?
They were quite good, really, because they were cut above the average, of course. They were businessmen, most of them, and quite a lot of them were commissioned, of course. No, they were quite good. They had the facilities to go to, the squash clubs and things like that they obviously belonged to. Although, on one occasion, I took the whole battalion on a run and walk, and they didn't like that at all.
They didn't?
No. So they hadn't done much running about. But on the whole, they were quite a fit lot of lads and nice people. But,
you were saying earlier on that you didn't do very much in the way of cross-country running, and I wonder why that was, because it's a fairly...
But during the war?
Yes.
I don't think there was any particular reason. Cross-country running... as it is cross-country running, not to be mixed with endurance tests. We did plenty of endurance tests, like the 3 mile, the 3 miles in an hour, or this sort of thing. That took the place of cross-country runs. It was easier to organise once you got your obstacles up and that, because it'll all be part of obstacle training as well. I I think it was the right thing to do, was to go into obstacle training and endurance training rather than worry about cross-country running.
Now, the Warwicks, were they a regular battalion that you joined?
It was the Warwicks Depot.
It was the depot. In
Budbrook, yeah. Warwick. And
Who was coming into the depot? Was this reservists or was it conscripts by this time?
Oh, it was a bit of each. Mainly reservists. So it was mainly reservists when I got there, but as people were called up, they would go through the depot the same as they did at Bodmin or anywhere else.